Okay, good morning. I'm honored to be here, and I'm actually very excited to share with you our evaluation findings coming out of our teen pregnancy prevention program. I'm going to give you an overview of the program and share with you some of the preliminary findings from across the program, and then I'm here with some very talented colleagues who are going to be able to talk to you about their particular evaluation studies as part of the program. Unfortunately, due to a family emergency, one of the panelists today is unable to make it, and that was Mary Prince, who is from the South Carolina campaign and was going to present on the It's Your Game study. So sorry, you're not going to be able to hear that one today. Okay, so the Office of Adolescent Health was established in 2010 with the mission of advancing best practices to improve the health and well-being of America's adolescents. And we support that mission with several activities, but most notably for today is implementing and administering the evidence-based teen pregnancy prevention program. So the teen pregnancy prevention program was also initiated in 2010. It's one of six major evidence-based policy initiatives currently being implemented across the federal government, and it represents a number of firsts for the field. It's the first time we had an evidence-based approach to TPP. It's the first time the government defined rigorous evaluation for TPP, and the first time the government defined what constitutes an evidence-based program for TPP. So our legislation actually uses the words evidence-based and requires us to spend 75% of our funding on programs with demonstrated evidence of effectiveness. The intent of the program when it was being designed by an interagency work group at HHS was to make it the most rigorous program the field had seen yet, and I think it is and still is. HHS created the Pregnancy Prevention Evidence Review to determine the best available evidence, and we fund only those programs in our Tier 1 or replications of evidence-based programs that received a high or moderate rating by that HHS evidence review. Okay, so the program itself, our first cohort of the TPP program just ended this summer. The program itself is $100 million per year for five-year grants. It's two tiers. Tier one is 75% for replication of evidence-based program models. We have 75 grantees in that category, 16 of the largest of which conduct rigorous evaluations, and that would be the grantees that receive $1 million a year or more. Tier two is 25% of the funding for demonstration programs to develop and test additional models and innovative strategies, and that includes significant adaptations to the evidence-based programs. We have 18 grantees in that category, and they all must conduct rigorous evaluations. We set a very high bar at OAH for our TPP grantees. We have many expectations that begin with a phased-in implementation period. It's very important from our perspective that grants have a year to plan, to pilot, to make sure that implementation and evaluation of their programs have the best chance for success. We have our grantees maintain fidelity to the program model, implement with quality, maintain high levels of retention and engagement, and that they are implementing programs that are medically accurate and age appropriate. And we have a number of systems in place at OEH that help support these requirements and ensure that they're being met. All of our grantees collect and report uniform performance measure data, and all of our evaluations adhere to the HHS Pregnancy Prevention Evidence Review. All of our evaluation work focuses on addressing two questions focused on both tiers. So for Tier 1, we're trying to test whether programs identified by the evidence review reduce births, pregnancies, STIs, and associated sexual risk behaviors when replicated at large scale in different settings with different samples. And what's important to note here is OAH's definition of replication. There are a lot of definitions of replication out there. Ours is very simple. It simply means that the program was implemented as it was designed. That's it. We're not replicating the original studies with the original samples in the original settings. That's why I italicized those words. Most of our grantees take these programs that have at some point demonstrated evidence of effectiveness and taken them to new settings and new places. And so we can start to piece together a picture of where these programs are working and with whom. And then for Tier 2, we're simply trying to identify new programs that have that same kind of effectiveness. Okay, so we get this question all the time about why do we do so much evaluation, because we do have an evidence base. But the answer is the evidence base is young. There's only 37 programs identified as having evidence of effectiveness in TPP. Most of those are backed by a single study and conducted usually not by an independent evaluator. So we know from recent work that we really need multiple evaluations of a single program model to have confidence in its effectiveness. So one or two evaluations of a single program is great, but we're really looking to infuse the evidence base with as much as we can so we can start to evaluate programs based on the breadth of the evidence behind them. That's an OAH goal. The other issue is very recent articles, blogs, which I've listed 2014, 2015, that show us that these initial studies, when taken large scale and evaluated by an independent evaluator, don't show the same findings as the original study. And we know that number is actually as high as 50 to 80%. So let that soak in for a second. So 50 to 80% of these original studies are not reproducible when they are taken large scale and conducted by an independent evaluator. So that's why we continue to do evaluation. So our evaluation strategy focuses on both the tiers and utilizes both federal contracts and federal grants. So for tier one, we have a federal contract going on evaluating three of the evidence-based program models. At the grantee level, we have 16 grantees conducting 17 different program evaluations. And what I want to note here is that you can see we have multiple evaluations of some of these program models. So when we talk about evaluations, we have many more evaluations than we actually have program models. We're only testing 10 program models. In tier two, similar strategy. We have a federal contract evaluating six different programs, and then we have about 18 grantees evaluating different programs as well. I already mentioned that they all have to collect and report on standardized performance measures, but they also have a standardized set of outcome measures that they collect and report to us. And then we have what I would call intense evaluation training and technical support that we offer to our grantee evaluations. So this is just a figure to illustrate that support, because I think it's important to go through it. Our support starts first with our OAH project officers. They speak to all of their grants once a month. On top of that, we have a contract for evaluation, training, and technical assistance. At the beginning of these evaluations, a TA provider, we call them our TA liaisons, are assigned to each and every one of the evaluations, and they stay with them for the 5 years. They speak to them at least on a monthly basis. They review all of the reporting and provide feedback. We have an in-house evaluation specialist, which is actually myself. And I put this on the slide because I do think it's important to mention it's a unique feature at OAH. Often in the federal government, federal evaluators are housed in their own office somewhere else, and they periodically interact with the program office. In this model, I'm an OAH employee, like everybody else. I'm at the OAH office in Rockville, and when something comes up, we have real-time access to each other. And so we're constantly monitoring the evaluations and being able to keep them on track and make sure that they're meeting the research quality standards of our evidence review. Every 6 months, our evaluation grants have to report into us their evaluation progress. It's reviewed and feedback is provided. We try to make real-time corrections when we start to see things kind of sway. And then that final orange circle is just a whole host of other reporting that we ask from our evaluation grantees. Each one has to be reviewed and ultimately approved by OAH before our evaluations move on to the next phase. So this is just to show you what our evaluations look like. As you can see, almost all of our evaluations are randomized control trials, either at the youth level or at the cluster level random assignment. We have a handful that are quasi-experimental designs, either designed that way from the start because an RCT simply wasn't possible, or because there was a challenge somewhere early on in the RCT, and so we had to convert it to a high-quality QED. The majority of our evaluations are taking place in school settings, either during or after school. We have a good proportion going on in community-based settings. We have a few in clinics, and then we have one evaluation of a program that's being implemented online. So the TPP program serves youth 10 to 19 years old, but our evaluations focus a little bit more on the older youth. As you can see, 30% of our evaluations are middle school only, but the remaining are middle school and higher, so a little bit older. And then that final bar chart is just to show you our counterfactuals, our comparison, okay? More than half of our evaluations are just being tested against a business as usual condition. But business as usual could mean nothing is going on, which is an extremely rare case these days. Or it could be all the way up to actually some pretty heavy duty pregnancy prevention work is already going on in that community. So it's important for our evaluations to understand, did they replace this programming? Was it added on top of the programming? Was there really nothing else going on? Because that's how we draw conclusions about the effectiveness of what we're testing. For the remaining evaluations, some of our grantees offered programming to the control group, often a health or nutrition program, but really we had a whole host of things, including a safe driving course was offered. So our evaluators are free to design their evaluations as most appropriate for the intervention that they're testing and the sample and setting that they're testing it in, but OAH does have some minimum requirements. So as far as data collection, we require three. The first is the baseline prior to the program being implemented. Then we have a short-term follow-up, which is typically an immediate post up to 6 or 9 months post-program delivery, and then the long-term is typically 12 to 18, and in a couple of cases, a 24-month follow-up after the program has finished being delivered. I had mentioned that we have a uniform set of outcome measures that we ask all of our evaluations to collect. These are them, the behaviors and intentions, and as you can see in the behaviors, these are all outcomes that actually tie directly back to the HHS Pregnancy Prevention Evidence Review, because that's our goal ultimately, to send all of our evaluations over to the evidence review and either add information to existing programs identified as effective by the evidence review or identify new programs to go on the evidence review. Okay, so here are our preliminary results for Tier 1. Preliminary means most of these, we have a very, again, intense review process. It's a 4 to 6 month process to review back and forth these reports until they get to the point that OAH can approve them. We only have a handful of approved reports at this point, so please keep that in mind. And the data reflects pretty much immediate post up to 6 months post program. Our evaluation findings are falling into three buckets. The first bucket is the implementation of the program went really well, the evaluation went well, and they did achieve positive behavioral impacts. The second bucket is similar. The implementation and evaluation were very well done, but we did not see the expected behavioral outcomes. So I also just want to clarify, these are only behavioral outcomes, the evidence review behavioral outcomes. So those two buckets are actually relating back to our research questions. That starts to help us put together where these programs are working and with whom. So they're both buckets very important. Remember I mentioned at the beginning 50 to 80% of these replications shouldn't be verified according to recent evidence, which means we would expect 20 to 50% and we're at 21%. So we fall exactly where we were expecting. The final bucket, about a third of our evaluations, something went wrong in the implementation, there might have been challenges in the evaluation, and so we're not going to draw any conclusions about the effectiveness of those programs at this time. That would be unwise. So the percentages across the top have to do with the actual number of evaluations, but as I said, we were only testing 10 program models. So of the 10 program models, we were able to find positive behavioral impacts on 4 of them. So depending on which way you look at it, we may have a replication rate of 40%. Again, right where we would have expected that to be. Similar pattern for Tier 2. We have the three buckets. Everything went great, and we found positive behavioral impacts, about 32%. Middle bucket, everything went great, but we didn't see the expected behavioral impacts. Again, these start to answer these questions, our research questions. And then that third bucket where there were challenges somewhere and we don't want to draw any conclusions about the effectiveness of the program. The percentages, again, are related to the number of evaluations we were conducting. But what this translates to is we think we've identified 8 new programs for the evidence-based list. And to give you a little perspective, as of today, there's only 37 programs on that list. So this is just quickly to show you the kinds of behavioral impacts. These all relate back to our evidence review. We're seeing nice impacts in sexual initiation, frequency of sex, number of partners, contraceptive use. We're seeing some nice outcomes on secondary, intermediate outcomes, attitudes, knowledge, skills, and intention. The important takeaway message from this slide is that we often don't see both. So we're seeing some positive behavioral impacts, but we're not seeing the intermediate impacts, and vice versa. So for me, that calls into question, are we using the right measures for these, or are there maybe issues in some of these logic models that need to have a second look? Okay, so conclusions. Basically, the findings are exactly what we would have expected to see. We think we've identified 8 new programs that will be added to the evidence list after there's the next evidence review update. 21% of our evaluations replicated the original findings, and 40% of the evidence-based program models were able to be replicated. And we've identified some programs that could probably use some additional research or some additional consideration. Implications of these findings. First, replication evaluations should be more of a routine practice. I think our data shows you that just because a program was found to be effective once doesn't mean it's going to be effective forever and doesn't mean it's effective everywhere. So we need to continue doing these evaluations. Failure to replicate does not mean the original study was wrong. Our evidence base, most of that is 10, 15, 20 years old, some of these studies. It's a different day today. Reporting and publication bias, I cannot stress enough. The first 2 buckets that we showed you of our findings are so important, and I really ask journals to publish when there aren't findings, when the findings are null. I encourage people to just write your reports and get them up on websites, because until we know what's not working, we're reinventing the wheel. It's just as important to know what's not working or where it's not working as it is to know what is working, so we can continue to move that needle forward. I already said this, are our logic models correct? Are our intermediate measures correct? You know, they don't seem to be correlated to the behaviors, so something's going on there. New strategies to evaluate hard-to-reach populations. This is one of the common set of evaluations that fell into our inconclusive category, typically with tribal populations. We can do good program implementation, but the sample sizes are so low that we can't determine anything from it. So I think we need a coordinated approach where we have multiple implementing organizations implementing the same program with the same surveys when we pool their data. Alternative behavioral measures for younger youth, and I'm running out of time, so I apologize that I'm speaking so fast. But we are measuring condom contraceptive use and pregnancy and birth outcomes at a time when the rates of those are so low. So I think we need to identify the measures just before that, the kissing, the touching, that's later correlated to these other outcomes. So I think that might actually change what we're seeing in our evaluation findings if we went in that direction. And then I'll just kind of skip. Oh, well, I do want to say fidelity and adaptations. We at OAH are pretty diligent. When we say that we have evaluated a certain program, we evaluated that program because we know if they made adaptations to it, we know if they were implementing it with fidelity. If something changed, we put it in the third bucket and we don't draw conclusions about its effectiveness. And then I think from everything I've said, probably the last bullet is kind of obvious. And then my last slide is just to have you keep an eye on our website. I think after the holidays, we'll start to try to release these reports as they're approved and ready to be posted publicly. There will be another update to the evidence review that's scheduled to be released, I think, by February of 2016. And then, of course, OAH has a supplement to AJPH. It'll feature at least half of these evaluations, and that should be published around the fall of 2016. So keep an eye out for that too. So thank you very much for your time.